Now, a guest sitting down the studio right in front of me now. Let's take a little blast of some of the music and movies that he wants to hear and talk about. And we'll start with Mac the Knife. The guy sitting in front of me doesn't sing that song. Don't be ridiculous, no. But the guy sitting in front of me is a man that really does need no introduction. And he's here to talk about movies, talk about music, and talk about himself, of course, as well, because he has the autobiography out now this weekend. And we are talking here about Packy Bonner. The book itself is actually called The Last Line. For those of you who mightn't understand what that might mean, I'm sure it's the last line of defence.
It's the last line of defence, and it's the last line maybe I'll ever write again after going through that stressful period.
Can I just say, I'm sure down through the years, Packy, there would have been people who would have said, you know, God, would you write a book? Yeah. It is 25 years since Italia 90. Was that the jeepers, I better do it now?
Yeah, well, the co-writer obviously was Gerry McDade, a friend really over in Glasgow who worked with Celtic, but is also working, and he's a stand-up comedian. There's so much things, and he's been on to me for 2 years to see what I do, and I've got so many offers to write this book, and I said no, not going to happen. And then he forced me into it, and then 25 years I'm saying, let's do it now or I'll never do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what we did, and it was a brilliant exercise, to be honest, reliving and the memories and going down memory lane, but in many ways also stressful, because you know you want to write it in a way. It's a story about me leaving Donegal, leaving my homeland, my friends, my family, and going to a city like Glasgow when I was 18 years old, and how it affected me and changed me. And I tried to look at it, even when people hopefully are reading it, the people, especially the immigrants in Glasgow, and they're maybe reliving their own journey and their own memory. And I try to write it that way rather than chronicle all of the matches and so on.
Rather than introducing you with a piece of the music that you picked, which is Mac the Knife there, just I could have said like this, you know, you're one of Ireland's favourite sporting stars, and that is 100% absolutely true. Why do people like you so much? What's so great about you, Packy?
I don't know. I don't think they like me. I think because of this penalty save.
Oh, really? Which one was that?
The penalty save that everybody keeps talking about every time. Right. I mean, but I think because...
Oh, well, hold on a second. Let's talk about 2-0 against Holland in 94.
I know.
Let's start there.
And they don't talk about it. They don't talk about the bad things. But I think because we were part of that group of players under Jack, you know, and I was probably from the northwest of Ireland, down that part of the world, we were under a man who led us to success, even though we didn't win anything. But it was a wonderful journey, and everybody that was part was living then and part of it, they all remember that journey, and I think the emotion of it all also helps people to feel that we were all the actors, and that's what I probably say. And I was one of the actors because I was the goalkeeper, and you kind of stand out in that way. And maybe the name Packy Bonner also, there's not too many Packy Bonners around.
No, probably
with that,
not.
With that particular
name. Having said that, you've just mentioned the two things, so I just want to go between those two, because is it fair to say that in 1990 it just all seemed to gel, it all seemed to be right, it all seemed to be a great bunch of players? Was it ever so slightly, was it slightly falling apart maybe by 94? By that I mean, like, you know, first of all, America was the wrong place for football. Yeah. Nobody had any idea there was a World Cup going on. It was American, and that doesn't help. You have to go up and down from Orlando. The heat was absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
All of these things.
Yeah.
Was that also manifesting itself in the fact that the team were, 4 years ago was 4 years ago. Maybe it's all slightly falling apart.
Well, we had a new group of younger guys coming in, Gary Kelly, Jason McAteer, Phil Babb, those type of guys, and those were the new kids on the block, along with the older guys. But I think mostly because of the heat, because of America. And it was like mini World Cups. I describe it in that way, that you had one over in California, one up in Boston, one down in New York. And there was no communication. Like, if you turn on the TV at that time, you got a game coming on. It was 4 minutes before. And the build-up to a game is... So the whole thing was... And the heat was amazing. And we were so unlucky. We were so unlucky in many ways that we were based down in Orlando.
Yeah.
And then we went... When we won our game against our qualified, we were back down in Orlando. And I think then the heart fell out of it a little bit.
You know,
but time had moved on. Jack Charlton said to me once, he says, as a manager, you stay in a job for 4 years.
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah.
Jack was in it for 10 years. He went against his principle, really. And it probably after that, 94 was the time for Jack, I think, probably to step out. And he stayed for
another tournament. Funny, I was at Anfield and I saw, Clivert scored the two goals against Ireland. That was Jack's last match. That was 95, I think it was, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, like, just as regards you just taking those years, a couple of years later, you would have found yourself, right, it's all kind of over now in some ways, you know, like 80 or 97 or whatever and that. Is it fair to say that you might have been a bit like a lot of players from the past, that you didn't really think too much about your future, and suddenly you were a certain age, and 97 would not exactly have been the greatest year in your life. Great, happily married, kids, all the rest of it, whatever. But, gosh, I'm the typical bloody footballer at the age of whatever I am now, a bit older than the usual because the goalie stays a bit longer, but I'm still, what am I going to do?
Yeah, no, actually, that's the opposite. I remember doing my coaching courses, for example, when I was 26 years old. Most players leave it till after 30 and then 34 and they don't have... But I went in and did all my coaching badges in Scotland at 26 years old. I went back to college when I was playing with Celtic to do a business diploma. And so I was always thinking about that. But then reality does strike, what am I going to do? But I was fortunate because Mick kept me on as a goalkeeper, the first goalkeeper coach, and I went down to Reading with Tommy Burns, assistant manager, and I also ran a business with Pierce O'Leary for a little while over in Scotland, and that. So I was always thinking and that, and I was fortunate probably to save, probably that that type of thing helped me then to do other things in life, and then I got the lucky break to get the job here in Ireland as technical director. Which
so in other words, it worked out very well for you. I'm sure you saw an awful lot of your colleagues fall
absolutely.
By the wayside.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, fortunately, I think that the top teams, the Irish team wasn't too bad. Most of them went either into business or into press or into, you know, the media or into coaching jobs. And if you look at them all now, they're all done okay. And they were all leaders, by the way. They all could do it. And they were capable of doing it. They had a competence. You talk about the game, they were leaders in their own right. Some of the weaker teams that you play in, then they fall away. And some of the Celtic guys, the problem when you play with Celtic, and I was there for 17 years, which was quite an incredible length of time. You don't network people. You don't go network, you know, chairman or other players from other teams who gets jobs. So you're kind of a little bit out on your own there. That I found that the most difficult.
In other words, are you saying that in those 17 years, if you had played for five clubs instead of one, it might have been better for you?
That's exactly what happens. You know, they move around and they meet people, they meet chairman, and when jobs are going, people know who they are. From my point of view, that was, unless I got a job at Celtic, which I did as a goalkeeper coach for a while, but if I got a job at Celtic, so you have to try and find your way and make your way. I do stuff with BBC over there with the TV and radio, which is fantastic. I travel now all over Europe with UEFA doing coach education. The one thing that I did here in this country, which I look back on now, I went down and did a course down in Limerick, which was then NCTC under Pat Duffy and Liam Moggan, a tutor course, and that to me set me for the rest of my life, because it gave me life skills, and anybody who has been there will tell you exactly the same. It changes your whole way of thinking about life, along with that and the experience plus the university stuff.
So you thought it would be a good course to do, and it turned out to be a brilliant course.
It's a brilliant course. It was the best course I've ever done in my life, because it made me think about life and who I am, and finding out who you are probably is the most important thing, and how you then relate to other people.
Well, listen, I'm going to find out some of your tastes here. Just building up in the background, there's a song called Where the Streets Have No Name, the opening track on the album The Joshua Tree. Why have you picked that one, Paddy Bonner?
Yeah, well, we used to have it in the dressing room. I remember going into the dressing room with Jack and Mick Byrne, you know, would be in there, and he would be getting on, he was playing the guitar and getting the atmosphere going after the teams the team was named, and it would be in the dressing room bellowing out, and that stuck in my brain, and it will always be in my brain, and the atmosphere around it and the crescendo to
and
it.
Larry Mullen was probably dropping in, wasn't he?
Larry used to come to the games and all that. We knew him very well and brilliant guy and loved the games, so Larry was part of it all.
Everywhere you go, does somebody sort of say something about, you know, like the whole idea? Sorry, I'll take that song down for a second and put it back up in a second or two. It's just about the whole idea of what Italia 90 meant to people. I'm not even talking about the save. I'm talking about just the whole thing of it. And it was in Italy, which is a country is like steeped in football.
Yes.
And also, by the time they beat us with Scalacci's goal in the quarterfinal and all the rest, etc., the whole place, I know this because I was there, was absolutely crazy. And the memories people have, do they just still talk to you about
it? Still talk about it. And that's the phenomena about that particular period. I'm still trying to work it out. Honestly, I'm really trying to work out how did it catch the imagination, not just of the people who travelled to and the media who had to be there, but the people from all different sports and walks of life. And I went into many houses down in Donegal when I went home, old people that I knew, and they loved that period. They were so caught up with that almost 6 weeks and even thereafter. And you could talk about it and they felt in the emotion about it. I think when you're tied up emotionally with something, it really sticks in your brain. And then people talk to me now exactly where they were, what they did, and I hear different stories. And that was the great thing about it too. Everybody had their own story. about it. Not my, my story was great. You couldn't be in two places at one time. You couldn't be in Italy or you couldn't be in Ireland. And that was unfortunate. We'd love to be in both. And Italy, you're right. It was a passionate
let's take
soccer place.
A quick blast. Where the Streets Have No Name, this is you too. Where the Streets Have No Name is what it's called. We're talking to Paddy Bonner here. He's got his autobiography out now this week. It's called The Last Line. And just taking like that whole thing from 1994 to where we are now, etc. You're saying there, like, you know, it's amazing how big it actually was. Paddy, we had never been in the World Cup before.
No.
And in the space of four World Cups, we got into three.
Yeah,
we got
amazing.
Into, you know, 1994, 2002. We didn't make 98, you know.
No, and but I must admit, we got to playoffs in 96.
Yeah.
We got to playoffs
that's
in 98.
Yeah.
And we got to playoffs in 2002 under Mick McCarthy. And the thing about Mick, and I talk about it, Mick had to change that team around and bring all those young guys, good guys who came under Brian with the youth teams, but make them almost international players. And some of them, of course, like Robbie Keane is still playing, and Shea and so on. But he had to give them their chance and progress. And so Ireland was very successful for almost a 20-year period, which is incredible.
And by the way, Paddy Bonner, Shea Given, Donegal, what the hell is that about?
I don't know. And there were so many
any more goalies up there?
There was young guys. Some of them didn't make it, but some of them all went away. And James Gallagher went away. Young Joe Coll went away to Man United. Conrad Logan still over in England. So there was a whole phenomenon of young goalkeepers coming through. Maybe we had an influence. Maybe there was something in the water. I don't know.
Okay, listen. I might as well. I'm going to get it. I almost just want to get this out of the way. But like, I say you can quote this off by heart, but I might as well play it because it brings people right back. And if you're wondering what it is I'm going to play, forget about it. You just don't know what I'm talking about then, because it's so bloody obvious.
And it's now Romania's second substitute, Daniel Timofte, Dynamo Bucharest, to step forward. Timofte against Bonner.
I mean, like, do you want me to just go on about this forever? You've talked to Timofte since.
No, there's so much more about the book than just
exactly.
The penalty
save.
Exactly,
and you've
saved,
also got
sure.
A boat. Somebody has a boat in Donegal called
Timofte.
Okay, look, that was brilliant. That was Italian 90. That brings you right back, etc. and blah, blah, blah. As I say, like, one thing you haven't mentioned at all yet, would you go as far as saying that 2 years before that was the biggest game of your life, really, in some ways?
I think so. Anybody that was around that time.
That's the Euros.
The Euros.
England.
And beaten England, first time ever. I think it was probably my best game for Ireland. It kind of almost set me up as an Irish player.
When you say game, are you talking about many saves, or are you just talking about such a good defence in front of you that you just both that you all just played
no,
so
I think,
well? Because obviously
was,
a clean sheet is what your whole thing is about.
Of course,
really.
And we had scored with Ray, and then we were defending against a decent England team with Glenn
Gary Lineker was doing. Glenn wasn't on in the beginning, was he?
No, and he came on, and he was the guy then who was hitting the passes for Gary Lineker, and Gary Lineker was the top shot at the time. He was the guy that everybody was talking about, and to stop him scoring, he should have scored a hat-trick. I had a little bit of luck, but I made saves, and important saves, and it was sort of in the heat of the battle. But for me to be able to do that for my country in the very first game against England in a competitive thing for me was, I look back at it and say that was the defining moment. The penalty save people remember, but that was the one that set me up as an international player.
Yeah, by the way, 3 years ago, 2012 was only our second time in the Euros, 88 and 2012, and let's just say we didn't do very well in 2012. What do you think about 2016? Just, you know, like, whatever, chances or whatever. Like, for instance, just even qualifying for these kind of things now, it seems to be easier in some ways in that they might allow more teams in, like top two plus best third and all that kind of thing, as opposed to just top one and best second or whatever it used to be, whatever. But in another way, it is a lot harder, isn't it? One of the reasons being, would the current crop of players not be playing at a high enough level?
Well, there's a number of things. One, there's more teams. In our day, there was less teams. Now, just 54 countries, and you're playing almost two matches within a week, and that's not easy. Maybe 4 or 5 days in between, you've got to travel, and you go to places like Kazakhstan, which is you know, 4 hour difference. Really, really difficult to qualify, and it's over a longer period. You know, and, you know, there's big gaps in between the games. Not easy for an international manager, and I'm sure Martin O'Neill will admit that it hasn't been easy especially for him, compared to what it is at club level. The other thing is, of course, the players are not playing in at European football. When you look back to the teams I played with, all of the guys, most of the guys anyway, were playing with the top teams: Manchester United, Arsenal, yeah. Liverpool, Celtic, Spurs, those type of teams. And then now it's very, very difficult. We've got a few at Everton, as we know, but in the main, it's very difficult. And if you're not playing international or European football on a regular basis, then it's very difficult to transfer that across to international. But what I would say is, I really believe that international football now for players is hugely important. I don't think they put enough emphasis on it, because if you qualify, and you must do well now, qualification is no good anymore. You have to qualify and do well, but you can really make a name in international football that you may not, never get a chance in European football. And that's what our guys should be really looking forward to. It's amazing, this year you could have Northern Ireland, Wales, England, Ireland and Scotland, if the two games go.
Okay, fair enough. Poland and Russia will have something to say about that.
Germany will qualify.
Well, Germany's there.
But that could happen, and incredibly, and that's probably, when you say it's easier, that has a change because of the third place. But all of Northern Ireland could finish top of the group. Wales could finish top of the group. Ireland could qualify in second place, and England top of the group. So they're not qualifying as third place teams. Yeah, so something has changed.
Like that group in 88, Holland, it was Russia or USSR, as it was then, England, etc. That was a tough one. Listen, I tell you what, I want to get back to a little bit of music now. You mentioned the U2 thing. I played Mac the Knife earlier on. Why Mac the Knife?
Well, Mac the Knife was Tommy Burns, one of his favourites, because we used to have fantastic parties, and Tommy was
Did you get up and sing it?
No, I'm not a singer, but Tommy used to sing it, and Charlie Nicholas would have been at the parties, and those guys, and they were a competition to see who actually was up singing first. It's a very Glasgow phenomenon to sing songs, but like Ireland in many ways, and that. But we had great parties with Tommy, and Tommy was a wonderful guy who almost enjoyed people coming to his house to have a family occasion where he's gone, but our families are very much together, and I remember him and his songs, really.
Okay, by the way, we are talking to Paddy Bonner. The Last Line is the name of the book. You do say that you're an introvert. Now, if you just go back to going over, before I play another piece of music, going over to Scotland, it would have been very difficult. Like, we always heard the stories of George Best going over and coming straight back after just about a few months or something, because he just couldn't, homesickness and all the rest of it. You had to go over and play Celtic Rangers matches. What the hell was that like? Is it as bad as, like, I've never been at one, and I don't know if I ever really want to. It's not great, is it, in a lot of ways?
I think people miss it now.
Great in some ways, but there's a lot of bad vibes in other ways.
There is, of course, but I think people do miss that atmosphere and that sort of competition.
Rangers are gone.
That competition, they're out of it things now, and people have missed it, because it was a huge, like, we grew up, I was a young man in Donegal, I remember it, I remember, you know, listening to people talking about that atmosphere, and so, and when you go in and experience it, not so easy. You have to perform, you've got to sometimes go to Ibrox. We went to Ibrox once where we had no crowd. Our crowd was banned, some seats broken, and that was you going into the Lions Den. I actually enjoyed it. I don't know whether it was a Donegal thing in me or my upbringing, but I liked going into the Lions Den and performing and trying to beat them. Sometimes, yes, there's the connotations aren't very good, but that's the same probably many ways in some of the other big countries around the world, that you need that competition, and that derby is to be a part of it. And be out there performing in it. And I think people do miss it.
And by the way, the fans in the penalty shootout, again, here I go back to Italia 90, behind the goal, they were all Irish fans.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I think it was a good thing. For me, it was a good thing. Sometimes I go back to the Rangers games. I remember walking out that day and going to the fans and giving them a smile, and them all, it was almost the Rangers fans on top of you. That's not easy. It's great when things are going well, but when you make the mistake, they really are on top of you. Well, the Italian, the penalty shootout, if you've got your own fans in behind you, you can look at them, you get inspiration from them, and I got inspiration, I talk about it in the book, from a few people that I recognise within that crowd, and that to me probably spurred me on.
Okay, by the way, I was going to mention movies as well too, but I know you have to go soon, and like you mentioned In the Name of the Father, you mentioned The Commitments, Midnight Express,
78, when I went away, and it was probably one of those movies that sticks in my mind, because
I'm not going to be a bad person when I go to
absolutely.
Turkey.
Absolutely, no, not so much Turkey.
Daylight's out of you.
Absolutely, and when I travelled around the world as a young man, and one of the things my parents always said, be careful almost when you're leaving, because he had to let me go almost leaving the nest, and I was always in the back of my mind, where am I going here? What am I doing? Watch, and I watched the movie, and it's something just sort of hit me to say, listen, never get into that situation, you know, and it can happen. So we've heard so many horror stories later on in life of different things that happened, but that stuck in my, and it was perfect because it was 1978, and the timing couldn't have been better.
Right, indeed. Yeah. By the way, just before I do play this last song here, which is Annie. Yeah. Well, tell me about Annie's song then. Why that? That's a wimpy old song.
Very wimpy old song, absolutely. Because it was my wife, my wife's Anne, and then that was our wedding day. I'm surprised you picked that one, actually. She put it in on the list.
Right.
She says, that's my song. You better put that in.
All right. Okay. Well, it wasn't the first song at your wedding or something like that.
It was. That's
oh,
exactly.
For crying out loud. Get the violins out.
Really? I know. And that's why she put it in.
That's a lovely thing. Okay. Look, before I play it, before I let you go, Paddy, and the book is called The Last Line. Just a quick one. Obviously, like, you know, the most contentious piece of the book has to be Saipan in some ways, just in terms of, like, there were two camps. Can I say that back in 2002, that long before the headlines hit the world of football in terms of Roy Keane leaving, that you would have thought even days beforehand, let alone maybe weeks beforehand, that Roy was not a happy man?
No, I think there was something up with him from day one when we met up until we went out there, and it manifested itself, of course, and what happened. He hasn't spoken about it and he hasn't said it, but I just felt that things weren't right with him. Maybe it was going away for that 6 weeks. It's not easy to go away for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, leaving your family and all of that type of stuff, and having to you know, be in a hotel around a group of guys. That is not easy. And we were lucky in you know, 1990 and even 94, that we had a really good group and we got on really well together, you know. So maybe that was the reason. I'm not so sure. But it was what I could say about 2002. I came back from it and I didn't really have a happy story. No happy stories. Well, 1994, even though 1990 and 88 were, we had wonderful stories around it. So 2002 was not a good time for any of us. Not for Roy, not for Mick, not for the people here in this country. It divided the nation. But it's happened in our history and we have to talk about it.
Yeah, and since it divided the nation, it divided the camp. But therefore, you were on the Mick McCarthy side. So when Brian Kerr decided he's probably going to bring him back in, did you think, okay, I'm going to sit down now. If he comes back in, I'm going to have to go.
No.
Was there an element of that?
No, I spoke to Brian about it. I wasn't happy. I told him I wasn't happy. I don't know if this should be happening because of the history. Brian wasn't there. I was there. I remember it well. And I sat down and we came to say, listen, well, I need to sit with Roy and talk it through. That's the way us Donegal people are. We like to say what we think. The same as Roy, like, but we still, if something happens, we have to get it out of the way and we have to talk about it and let's move on. And it didn't happen because Roy came in and then he left very quickly and we never had that real conversation. Maybe someday we'll have it.
Right, indeed. Just looking at the hands, the biggest hands in football. Listen, Paddy Bonner, thank you so much for dropping in to talk to us on the programme today. You are going now to midday to Easons today to sign the book, so I better let you out of here. It's called The Last Line, my autobiography, Paddy Bonner, and it's on sale now, and you'll find it everywhere. Sure, it's all over the place. What is it? Ebury Press, it is, yeah. £20, I think, or something along those lines. Good hard copy. It's Easons in O'Connell Street, by the way, not Easons in Dundrum or anywhere else. So, listen, enjoy yourself. Thanks very much, Paddy, for dropping in, and I'm going to play your wedding song.
Oh, my word.
Here they are, walking out together on the floor. Annie's song. God, we better hear it right now. Here it goes. Are you ready? Thanks a million, Paddy.